Hey, kitten.
We're continuing Chapter 16 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Harry did not get a chance to speak to Mr. Weasley, who was working very long hours at the Ministry until Christmas Eve night. Christmas Eve night. The Weasleys and their guests were sitting in the living room, which Ginny had decorated so lavishly it was rather like sitting in a paper chain explosion. Fred and George and Harry and Ron were the only ones who knew that the angel on top of the tree was actually a garden gnome that had bitten Fred on the ankle when he pulled up carrots for Christmas dinner. Stupefied, painted gold, stuffed into a miniature tutu with small wings glued to its back, it glowered down at them, the ugliest angel Harry had ever seen, with a large bald head like a potato and rather hairy feet. He seems awfully mean to the poor gnome. But anyways. They were all supposed to be listening to a Christmas broadcast by Mrs. Weasley's favorite singer, Celestina Warbeck, whose voice was warbling out of a large wooden wireless set. Fleur, who seemed to find Celestina very dull, was talking so loudly in the corner that a scowling Mrs. Weasley kept pointing her wand at the volume control so that Celestina grew louder and louder. Under cover of a particularly jazzy number called A Cauldron Full of Hot Strong Love, Fred and George started a game of exploding snap with Ginny. Ron kept shooting Bill and Fleur covert looks as though hoping to pick up tips. Meanwhile, Remus Lupin, who was thinner and more ragged-looking than ever, was sitting beside the fire, staring into its depths as though he could not hear Celestina's voice. "Oh, come and stir my cauldron, and if you do it right, I'll boil you up some hot strong love to keep you warm tonight." "We danced to this when we were 18," said Mrs. Weasley, wiping her eyes on her knitting. "Do you remember, Arthur?" "Hmm?" said Mr. Weasley, whose head had been nodding over the Satsuma he was peeling. "Oh, yes, marvelous tune." With an effort, he sat up a little straighter and looked around at Harry, who was sitting next to him. "Sorry about this," he said, jerking his head toward the wireless, as Celestina broke into the chorus. "Be over soon." "No problem," said Harry, grinning. "Has it been busy at the Ministry?" "Very," said Mr. Weasley. "I wouldn't mind if we were getting anywhere, but if the last three arrests we've made in the last couple of months, I doubt that one of them is a genuine Death Eater. Only don't repeat that, Harry," he added quickly, looking much more awake all of a sudden. "They're not still holding Stan Shunpike, are they?" said Harry. "I'm afraid so," said Mr. Weasley. "I know Dumbledore's tried appealing directly to Scrimjaw about Stan. I mean, anybody who's actually interviewed him agrees he's about as much of a Death Eater as this Satsuma. But the top levels want to look as though they're making some progress, and three arrests sounds better than three mistaken arrests and releases. But again, this is all top secret." "I won't say anything," said Harry. He hesitated for a moment, wondering how best to embark on what he wanted to say as he marshaled his thoughts. Celestina Warbeck began a ballad called "You Charmed the Heart Right Out of Me." "Mr. Weasley, you know what I told you at school when we were setting off for the station when we were setting off for school?" "I checked, Harry," said Mr. Weasley at once. "I went and searched the Malfoys' house. There was nothing, either broken or whole, that shouldn't have been there." "Yeah, I know. I saw in the Prophet that you'd looked. But this is something different. Well, something more." And he told Mr. Weasley that he has overheard everything he had overheard between Malfoy and Snape. As Harry spoke, he saw Lupin's head turn a little toward him, taking in every word. When he had finished, there was silence, except for Celestina's crooning. "Oh, where, my poor heart, where's it gone? It's left me for a spell." "Has it occurred to you, Harry," said Mr. Weasley, "that Snape was simply pretending?" "Pretending to offer help so he could find out what Malfoy was up to?" said Harry quickly. "Yeah, I thought you'd say that. But how do we know?" "It isn't our business to know," said Lupin unexpectedly. He turned his back on the fire now and faced Harry across Mr. Weasley. "It's Dumbledore's business. Dumbledore trusts Severus, and that ought to be good enough for all of us." "But," said Harry, just say Dumbledore's wrong about Snape." "People have said it many times. It comes down to whether or not you trust Dumbledore's judgment. I do, therefore I trust Severus." "But Dumbledore can make mistakes," argued Harry. "He says it himself. And you," he looked Lupin straight in the eye, "do you honestly like Snape?" "I neither like nor dislike Severus," said Lupin. "No, Harry, I am speaking the truth," he added, as Harry pulled a skeptical expression. "We should never be bosom friends, perhaps. All that happened between James and Sirius and Severus, there's too much bitterness there. But I do not forget that during the year I taught at Hogwarts, Severus made the Wolfsbane potion for me every month, made it perfectly, so that I did not have to suffer as I usually do at the full moon. But he accidentally let it slip that you're a werewolf, so you had to leave, said Harry angrily. Lupin shrugged. The news would have leaked out anyway. We both know he wanted my job, but he could have wreaked much worse damage on me by tampering with the potion. He kept me healthy. I must be grateful. Maybe he didn't dare mess with the potion with Dumbledore watching him, said Harry. You're determined to hate him, Harry, said Lupin with a faint smile. And I understand, with James as your father, with Sirius as your godfather, you have inherited an old prejudice. By all means, tell Dumbledore what you've told Arthur and me, but do not expect him to share your view of the matter. Do not even expect him to be surprised by what you tell him. It might have been on Dumbledore's orders that Severus questioned Draco. And now you've torn it quite apart. I'll thank you to give back my heart. Celestina ended her song on a very loud, high-pitched note, and loud applause issued out of the wireless, which Mrs. Weasley joined in enthusiastically. Is it over? Said Fleur loudly. Thank goodness, what a horrible... Shall we have a nightcap, then? Said Mr. Weasley loudly, leaping to his feet. Who wants eggnog? What have you been up to lately? Harry asked Lupin, as Mr. Weasley bustled off to fetch the eggnog and everybody else stretched and broke into conversation. Oh, I've been underground, said Lupin. Almost literally. That's why I haven't been able to write, Harry. Sending letters to you would have been something of a giveaway. What do you mean? I've been living among my fellows, my equals, said Lupin. Werewolves, he added, at Harry's look of incomprehension. Nearly all of them are on Voldemort's side. Dumbledore wanted to spy, and I was here, ready-made. He sounded a little bitter and perhaps realized it. He smiled more warmly as he went on. I'm not complaining. It is necessary work, and who can do it better than I? However, it has been difficult gaining their trust. I bear the unmistakable signs of having tried to live among wizards, you see, whereas they have shunned normal society and live on the margins, stealing, and sometimes killing, to eat. How come they like Voldemort? They think under his rule they'll have a better life, said Lupin. And it is hard to argue with Greyback out there. Who's Greyback? You haven't heard of him? Lupin's hands closed convulsively on his lap. Fenrir Greyback is perhaps the most savage werewolf alive today. He regards it as his mission in life to bite and contaminate as many people as possible. He wants to create enough werewolves to overcome the wizards. Voldemort has promised to pay in return, promised him prey in return for his services. Greyback specializes in children. Bite them young, he says, and raise them away from their parents, raise them to hate normal wizards. Voldemort has threatened to unleash him upon people's sons and daughters. It is a threat that usually produces good results. Lupin paused and then said, It was Greyback who bit me. What? Said Harry, astonished. When you were a kid, you mean? Yes, my father had offended him. I did not know for a very long time the identity of the werewolf who had attacked me. I even felt pity for him, thinking he had no control, knowing by then how it felt to transform. But Greyback is not like that. At the full moon, he positions himself close to victims, ensuring that he is near enough to strike. He plans it all. And this is the man Voldemort is using to marshal the werewolves. I cannot pretend that my particular brand of reasoned arguments make much headway against Greyback's insistence that we werewolves deserve blood, that we ought to revenge ourselves on normal people. But you are normal, said Harry fiercely. You've just got a problem. Lupin burst out laughing. Sometimes you remind me of James. He called it my furry little problem in company. Many people were under the impression that I owned a badly behaved rabbit. He accepted a glass of eggnog from Mr. Weasley with a word of thanks, looking slightly more cheerful. Harry, meanwhile, felt a rush of excitement. This last mention of his father had reminded him there was something he had been looking forward to asking Lupin. Have you ever heard of someone called the Half-Blood Prince? The Half-Blood what? Prince, said Harry, watching him closely for signs of recognition. There are no wizarding princes, said Lupin, now smiling. Is this a title you're thinking of adopting? I should have thought being the Chosen One would be enough. It's nothing to do with me, said Harry indignantly. The Half-Blood Prince is someone who used to go to Hogwarts. I've got his old potions book. He wrote spells all over it, spells he invented. One of them was Levicorpus. Oh, that one had a great vogue during my time at Hogwarts, said Lupin reminiscently. There were a few months in my 5th year when you couldn't move for being hoisted in the air by your ankle. My dad used it, said Harry. I saw him in the pensive. He used it on Snape. He tried to sound casual, as though this was a throwaway comment of no real importance, but he was not sure it had achieved the right effect. Lupin's smile was a little too understanding. Yes, he said, but he wasn't the only one. As I say, it was very popular. You know how these spells come and go. But it sounds like it was invented while you were at school, Harry persisted. Not necessarily, said Lupin. Jinxes go in and out of fashion, like everything else. He looked into Harry's face and then said quietly, James was a pureblood, Harry, and I promise you he never asked us to call him Prince. Abandoning pretense, Harry said, and it wasn't Sirius or you? Definitely not. Oh, Harry stared into the fire. I just thought, well, he's helped me out a lot in potions class, this prince has. How old is this book, Harry? I don't know, I've never checked. Well, perhaps that will give you some clue as to when the prince was at Hogwarts, said Lupin. Shortly after this, Fleur decided to imitate Celestina singing A Cauldron Full of Hot Strong Love, which was taken by everyone once they had glimpsed Mrs. Weasley's expression to be the cue to go to bed. Harry and Ron climbed all the way up to Ron's attic bedroom, where a camp bed had been added for Harry. And I think we'll stop there. And I hope you like that, my baby kitten. It's bedtime for the pup and bedtime for the kitten. Sweet dreams, darling girl. Good night.